All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here. How are you doing, Tim? Hopefully our system doesn't crash like it just did. This Riverside is not working well today. What's going on, Tim?
Nothing. No, it was a user error. My fault. I don't know what I did. I knocked my mic loose and it changed off the recording and whatever. But luckily we didn't get very far. So I'm good. I'm ready now. How you doing, John?
I'm good. It's so funny prepping for this episode. Game two was a soap opera. So much to talk about. So many different themes and angles and storylines to go over. So I don't want to waste any time and talk about my stinking chickens and your love life. I know you like to blab around. I'm in love. Oh, planning the wedding, all that garbage. Let's get into it, Tim. Can we do it, or you want to just get it out of your system?
No, let's do it. Let's talk some hockey.
All right, first we got to obviously acknowledge this episode is brought to you by Bet365, proud partner of Dropping the Gloves. Open an account today with Bet365 and bet on a huge range of markets. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it is never ordinary at Bet365. Use code HOCKEYCA. Get yourself some money in your bank by betting on some hockey games. Listen to Tim. He said Edmonton was going to win again. Wait a minute. You said Florida was going to win again. You said it was going to be a blowout. So we were both kind of right. I said it was a closer game. You said Florida was going to win. Potato, potato.
4-1. Is 4-1 a close game?
Empty net. You said high scoring game. I should say that. High scoring.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever.
Give it to me. I need it. Okay. I've had a long week.
Wednesday morning, man.
Oh, man. We're going on a trip next week to Wisconsin. So there's just a lot of stuff going on. And then It's busy. Anyways, let's talk about game two. Very exciting. Coming into the game, Edmonton needed to rebound, which is a funny way to say it because they were the dominant team in game one. They outplayed the Florida Panthers. They played really well. Sergei Bobrovsky stole that game. That's what everybody was talking about. This guy stood on his head. He played fantastic. He was just dominating the game. Gets another shutout in game one. Will Edmonton be able to crack that nut and play the same way that they were playing? Well, the scripts were flipped. The Panthers dominated this game from the drop of the puck. Edmonton gets on the board first. But after that, Tim, it was all Florida all night long, and there's lots to talk about. But just let's just start about the start of the game. Are you disappointed by how Edmonton started, or was it like a wake-up call for Florida, do you think? Saying, okay, we got lucky in game one. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, you said exactly what I was going to say, is that game one was Edmonton lost, but you felt okay about it because of the way that you played, and you kind of felt like you were the better team, and you do that again in game two. Bobrovsky probably can't stand on his head twice in a row, and you have a chance of tying up the series. But this time, it was like, even though it was Florida won both games, it was a completely different story in game two. Even though Edmonton got on the board first with a kind of an uncharacteristic goal from Bobrovsky, but a great play from Ekholm. And what a funny thing. I know that whoever the defenseman was did a good job of blocking the pass, but you're still a defensive defenseman on a rush with a 50-goal scorer. And to look off Draisaitl and take the shot, pretty ballsy move, but it worked for him, and they went up 1-0 pretty early.
Yeah, and that's when I honestly started to think Florida might get worked because that was a savable puck. It went right into Bobrovsky's chest and it kind of snuck its way through. And even throughout the whole game, Bobrovsky looked out of sorts. He was always falling over on his behind, really had a hard time finding his angles, finding himself in the net. So it was an uncharacteristic game from Bobrovsky, but luckily enough, he didn't really have to work much. It was a light workload for the Florida Panthers goaltender. I think the Edmonton Oilers had 8 shots through 2 periods, something silly like that, where they were just completely dominant. And it was the same script as game one, though. Other than 97 and 29, nobody could generate offense for the Edmonton Oilers. Nobody at all. And the Florida Panthers did a good job on the PK tonight. They did a good job limiting those two guys. Drysdale starts to look a little pedestrian. It's mostly the McDavid show when you're watching these games. When he's on the ice, your ears perk up. You watch him zip around. When he's not on the ice, nothing happens. Like, absolutely nothing happens for the Edmonton Oilers. It's astonishing the difference between one player when he's on the ice and then when he's not. The whole team is completely lethargic. They don't do any. I might be exaggerating it a little bit, but it seems to me that that's the case. And everybody knows it. And when he's on the ice, all eyes are on him. Every single Panther is aware of him. It's Forsling. It's Barkov. It's Reinhardt. It's Verhaeghe. Get him. If we shut him down, we shut down this team. And that's what they did. You can tell they're it's obviously, why would you not? But are you getting this sense too, that no one else, even Drysdale included, is having any impact on this series?
Yeah, although I will say that Stuart Skinner has played okay, you know, even in this game, right?
Like, he can't score, Tim.
Right, and he let in 3, but, and you know, maybe you want some of him back, but he's given you a chance to win. He's not been the issue, which I think a lot of us would have said, if Florida is up 2-0 after 2, you'd think that Skinner's had a couple of stinkers, and he really hasn't. I think it is probably more a credit to Florida, just how good they are and how deep they are and all the things we've said about the advantages they have over the Oilers, and it's played out in the first 2.
Yeah, and then just getting back to McDavid, I feel like he looks frustrated. He looks like he's spinning his wheels at times, and you look at the amount of effort that he puts in every single shift. I know people are criticizing him. Oh, he's a terrible captain, this and that. He's not going to win the big game. I don't put that on him. I think he's a really good leader. I think he goes out and he puts it on the line every single night. This guy plays 25 minutes, and he busts his hump every single time. And in the offensive zone, he's the cutbacks, Tim, the transitions, the around the worlds, the stop and goes. That's hard to do. That's hard to do when you're just getting bag skated, let alone in the Stanley Cup Finals when you got a guy draped all over you and you're just trying to control the play. And the reason he's doing all of this work, there's no one to pass to. There are no lanes. You watch the Florida Panthers, how they defend. One guy's on McDavid, usually Forsling. He hounds him. He's really good. But he's not, you know, he's not staying with him because it's McDavid. There are no lanes through the middle to get a pass through. Their sticks are really, really good. Their positioning is really solid. And McDavid, all he can do is just up and back, around and around. Let's do it again. And then finally he gets tired and he just throws it out front and the Panthers pick it off and away we go. So the zone time is there for McDavid. The effort is there. There's no output because no other guys can get open. And where's the Nuge? Where is he, Tim? Invisible.
Yeah, don't ask me. I mean, and again, a credit to Florida for you know, Barkov's doing what he did to McDavid, although we'll talk about why he left the game. But there's only so much you can do, and there's a talent level that McDavid and Drysdale have that'll get them there off some opportunities. But like, Florida's doing such a good job of shutting down the guys that they're supposed to shut down, because you know you can't completely shut McDavid down, but you can shut down Hyman with a good game plan. You can shut down the Nudes. You can shut down whoever else, Kane, all those guys, if you have a right game plan, you have the right players, which they do. And now it's like, now it's a confidence ego thing too. Like, they're sticking their chest out when they skate. Like, they know they're bigger, they're badder, they're faster, and they know they've got like Edmonton's playbook basically. So it's not going to get easier as the series goes on.
And just from the eye test watching the game, the work ethic the Florida Panthers put out, it's more than the Oilers. And it's not McDavid. It's not Drysdale. It's not Tkachuk. It's not Barkov. Those guys are all working hard. They're trying. It's the second tier of players. When you see Lundell and Verhaeghe and Luostarinen and Rodriguez and all of these guys even going down to their fourth line, it's incredible the back pressure they have, the jump they have on the forecheck. If they turn the puck over, they're not doing the loop. They're stopping and getting on their horse, and they're getting that guy who took the puck from them. It's everywhere on the ice. It's incredible. And that's not something that is a skill. You either just do it or you don't. So when I look at the Oilers, guys like Dylan Holloway, Adam Henrique, McLeod, Kane, Fogle, Janmark, do you ever notice a time when the Panthers are in their zone and they're breaking out and they get caught on the back check? Never. Or they go D to D and the Edmonton forward is just on his horse trying to get that D-man. Do you ever notice stuff like that?
It's a good point, and it makes me think, like, I feel like every year...
Every single time Edmonton has the puck, they go D to D. Every single time Edmonton is breaking out of their zone, there's always a Florida guy in their hip. There's always a Florida guy busting his hump to try to get him. Is that coaching? Is that just ingrained in the player, Tim? You tell me why there's a difference. This is the Stanley Cup final.
Well, I was going to say, like, every year we, like, forget how important, like, the fourth line matchups are. Because you think of, like, okay, who's won the cup in the last 5-10 years? You think of Ovi and Stamkos and Mark Stone and all those guys, McKinnon, and the incredible offensive efforts they put up. But it's always the third, fourth line matchups. So, like, whoever wins those, a couple of big goals, shutting down, creating pressure, creating turnovers, getting the offensive zone faceoffs, all those little things. And then we go through the summer, start the season, all the guys get the points again, and you forget until the time comes for the, I would say, the conference finals especially, and then the Stanley Cup finals for sure, is like, that's where those guys come back in and change series. And right now, Florida is just so much better than what Edmonton has to offer. The Lundells, we talked about that with Jason Gregor, I think. Like, he's so good. He's so good at what he does. Lyhtyrainen, like, he score a couple of big goals a series, and you don't even notice him. He's putting up, I don't know, is he playing 10 minutes a night, if that? But if they're big 10 minutes. And then Evan Rodriguez, man. We text about him almost every night now. Like, he's two more goals, and he's just... It's apparent that Edmonton doesn't have that same depth. And I thought maybe this year was different, but it's not.
Well, let's talk about his two goals, because they were directly related to Edmonton's best defenseman, Evan Bouchard.
Yeah.
Edmonton's up 1-0. Florida gets the puck deep. The Oilers gain control of it. And this is a case of expecting pressure due to the Florida Panthers forecheck. Evan Bouchard gets the puck. If this is the regular season, he gets this puck, he corrals it, he takes a beat, and he makes a good pass or a good play out of the zone. He gets this puck in the D zone. He is expecting someone to be on him right away. So he makes a knee-jerk reaction, and he just gets rid of it. He's like, let's get it out of the zone, over the blue, live to fight another day. Unlucky for him, he puts it right on Rodriguez's tape. And Rodriguez doesn't mess around. He's not a goal scorer. He's just throwing the puck at the net. He's throwing it to a spot, and it goes in. Stuart Skinner, good positionally. Screened a little bit. He's not expecting a shot there. So Rodriguez gets on the board 1-1 for the Florida Panthers. And you could sense this game was already over. Like, you could sense it. Florida was dominating. They had the pressure. And then Edmonton takes a 5-minute penalty. Warren Fogle knee on knee with Lyhtyrainen. 5-minute major. This game was going to be over. But no. Oliver Ekman-Larsson takes a 2-minute tripping penalty during that power play. I'm like, oh, this could be a big moment for the Edmonton Oilers. 4-on-4. You even saw Paul Maurice talk to the ref. He's like, no, we don't want to go 4-on-4. This isn't good for us. We don't like 4-on-4. Let's keep it, let's go 5-on-5. We don't like this. So he doesn't like 4-on-4 hockey, but it didn't happen. They get their 4-on-4. Florida continues to dominate, and it just snowballs from there. And talk about Rodriguez's second goal, because we talk about mistakes that are just knee-jerk reactions. And we talk about mistakes that could be easily changed. This second mistake by Evan Bouchard should never happen. Dude. Am I wrong, Tim?
No, and it actually reminded me of the Trouba play. And I forget who it was at the time. I think he tried to check on Bennett or Reinhardt. But, like, similar thing along the boards, try to step up. Actually, Nurse did that in game one, too. Like, you try to step up, take him out of the play, you miss. He buzzes by you and makes the centering pass. And I watch that happen. I'm like, Rodriguez is driving to the net, like to the middle of the net, through the middle. No one's on him. No, there's nobody on him. And it was, it was a very, very difficult play to make. That tip in was beautiful. Like, Skinner, not his fault either on that one. Like, he's all by himself. He makes the tip in really hard angle off a hard pass. But yeah, that's two for Bouchard, where just a mistake turned into a goal. And you do that in the Stanley Cup finals, a team like Florida is going to turn it against you.
Yeah, and it's your best defenseman. Like, that does not happen. Do you see Ekblad making those mistakes? He gets beat by McDavid every once in a while. Doesn't end up in the back of his net. Bobrovsky bails him out, but it's just, it should not happen. And we'll touch on Bouchard in a second, because this was an uncharacteristic game from him. But as I watched this game, you know, first period, second period, I just got the feeling it's super similar to last year. Vegas Golden Knights, the Florida Panthers. The Panthers were just really happy to be there. You know, they checked that box. They got to the Stanley Cup Finals. Everybody was injured. They were just out of gas. They didn't know what it takes to be a Stanley Cup winner. And everybody talks with that cliche, well, you have to go there and see what it takes. And I'm like, oh, no, you don't. No, you don't. This is a pretty clear-cut answer to that question. Yeah, you do. Florida saw what it took last year. And they went back. They healed up. And then they went back again stronger. They conditioned. Now they're ready for the Stanley Cup Finals. The Vegas Golden Knights got beat down the year before. They come back and win the Stanley Cup. I think the Oilers are getting a taste of what it takes to actually win the Stanley Cup, because they look out of sorts. The intensity's not there for them. They're cracking under the pressure. The pace of play is not there for them for the most part. I think McDavid's playing great. But as a whole, this team is just, they're hurt, they're overwhelmed, and they can't handle it so far. Mind you, it's only been two games.
That all makes sense to me, but what doesn't make sense to me is their power play not clicking. Yeah. And you know what I mean? Like, this was their bread and butter. Like, all things being equal, like, if you give them power play opportunities, 2-3 a game, they're going to score 2-3 goals, you know, 1-2-3. And they're not doing it. They're 0-7 on the series now. And if you had said they're going to get 3.5 a game, you think, okay, they're going to score 3-4 goals, and they have zero. And how much of that is, like, when you watch it, do you see them, like, not finishing chances, a little bit of puck luck, or is Florida just shutting it down?
Well, I think people are just undervaluing how good Florida's PK is. So in this playoffs, they've shut down now the number one and number two power plays in the regular season. New York Rangers, the Edmonton Oilers, completely dominated them, made them look pedestrian. And the reason they do it, how they do it is they pressure. They're aggressive. They don't let you set up as much as they can. You know, Edmonton's obviously a different animal because they're super skilled, but Florida's on their toes. Pucks at the point, they're going at the puck. Pucks on the half wall, they're coming at you. It's down low, they're coming at you. They're not letting you get set up. They're not letting you get comfortable. They're not allowing you to make that picture perfect play that every team likes to make, because in practice, when a team does a power play, oh, you got lots of time. Let's work on this. Let's work on this. Let's work on this. It's tough to do when there's a guy screaming at you every time you have to puck. You have to make quick passes. So, It's working. I think Edmonton will make adjustments, but it's tough when you have elite players that Florida does, and they're buying in on your concept of how to kill the penalty, which is high intensity, good sticks, and let's roll it over and let's go 30, 35 seconds. That's very hard to break. So Edmonton needs to change something, because much like the Rangers, if they can't get their power play going, they're done. Like, they are absolutely done. They have no chance of winning this cup unless their power play can pick it up. We saw what they do on 5-on-5. They get dominated. So they're not a 5-on-5 team. They need to win the special teams battle. And right now, it is not happening. Talk about the progressions of the periods, Tim. First period, second period, third period. It's astounding how different these teams are in the third period.
This has been the story for Florida, especially this entire playoffs. Like, they're usually down, or maybe tied, but they're usually losing after the first period.
Yeah.
They just get better as the game goes on. Second and third, their plus minus is just massive. And so the Oilers right now in the third period are minus 11. The Panthers are plus 17. I'm not great at math, but that's a 28 right point goal differential. That's a lot. That's a lot. And I think it's a credit to coaching and just, you know, you can't understate what it takes to win. When the game goes on, like, every puck battle means a little bit more. And that's where Florida just knows what it takes. And they've been here before. They lost last year. They're not going to let it happen again. And I think a lot of it too is just like I mentioned before, the confidence. Now that they come back and had the better third period so many times, it's mental. They expect to now. You know what I mean? Like, and Edmonton knows that, and kind of they have the reverse thing too. So yeah, again, I've said it before. I just feel like this is going to get it's going to get a lot harder for Edmonton to come back the more the series goes on.
Well, yeah, I really firmly believe that. Well, obviously, game three is do or die. If they lose that game, it's lights out. They won't have any chance in this series. But a lot of it comes down to conditioning and just, like you said, confidence. But Florida rolls their lines pretty well.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Barkov, you know, he matches up with McDavid, so he's out there a lot just in a matchup perspective. But at a whole, like, their fourth line gets some good line. They're PKing. They're on the ice quite a bit. So they're fresh. And like they talked about after beating the Rangers in the Eastern Conference Finals, like, they busted their hump this year. So I think that plays a lot in it. And then I think Chris Knobloch, for as much as he panders and says and likes to say, you know, we're going to roll four lines, we need everyone to, you know, to pull on the rope to win the Stanley Cup, he knows that that's not the case. He knows those third and fourth lines will get dominated if they play, you know, a full rolling style game where everybody's getting 15 to 20 minutes. So he can't do that. So no offense to McLeod and Fogle and Carrick and Janmark and Perry and Brown and all those guys. Like, they're overmatched in this series. They don't have the depth. It's apparent. I don't know if they're injured or just not skilled enough. But the only way Edmonton wins this series is if the top two lines dominate. And right now, that's not happening. But it might change. Things could change. Sasha Barkov, captain for the Florida Panthers, took a dirty hit from Leon Draisaitl in the third period. Like, if you flip the script and you have someone bury McDavid like this, it's just national news. This guy should be suspended 5 games. Because it's Draisaitl on Barkov, it not seems to be getting the severity as I think it should be. He jumped and he elbowed him right in the head. Like, this is the danger. It's a dirty hit. So Barkov left the game, did not return. I think he was probably in concussion protocol. He did practice. So he is skating. That's what you saw, Tim, correct?
Yeah, just in the last hour that came out that he practiced this morning, because after the game, Maurice said it wasn't good. Like, I don't know any details yet, but it's not looking good. He was pretty upset. And then yesterday he said he wasn't worse, so that's a good thing. The real assessment will be tomorrow, meaning today. And today he practiced with the team in his regular spot. So I think so. There's some speculation that it's actually not concussion-related. It might be part of the jaw. I think he's had jaw issues before. He's played with the bubble. Maybe we see him with a bubble tomorrow night. But if that's the case, it's probably better than a concussion related. And then also announced yesterday was that there's going to be no supplementary discipline for Draisaitl. No fine, no suspension. Were you surprised by that? Do you think that's the right call?
I'm surprised, yeah. But like, if you're trying to protect the star players, Barkov is one of the star players for Florida, you have to do something. I don't know. It's such a tricky thing because, like, it's Draisaitl. If this is Connor Carrick or Sam Carrick, excuse me, or Connor Brown who makes this hit, I think you see a suspension.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably suspendable, but I feel like in the playoffs and in the Stanley Cup finals, the bar has to be so high. Like, yeah. It has to be really over the top, egregious. And this was enough, you know, if you go by the rule book, but I'm glad that they didn't throw him, because even it just changes everything. And if Barkov's back, hopefully he is, and he's doing pretty close to what he's done in game one and two. I think it'll be fine. But yeah, I'm glad they didn't suspend him, because I feel like it has to be like really, really over the top bad to suspend someone in the finals.
Well, that's the issue. So what if Barkov is out? What if he, you know, he tries it and he can't go because it is a broken jaw, or there is some issue with some facial structure and he doesn't feel comfortable. So he misses game three, and then Edmonton wins, and then he misses game four because he's still not feeling right. And then Edmonton wins again. This is a huge issue, depending on how Barkov returns. And when he does return, I doubt he's 100%. So it does have lasting implications on this hit. So I don't know. I get what you're saying. It's playoffs. You got to suck it up. And it's a hard time to make this call and suspension. But does he get suspended in the regular season, Tim?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
probably.
So that's the issue there. If we're all for player safety and this and that, I get it. I'm with
John
you.
Scott, what does he know about player safety? Gave out concussions for a living.
Whoa. I'm with you. I don't think he should be suspended because it's a playoffs, yeah. But it's such a weird thing. But because it's 29 and because he's a superstar and it's a Stanley Cup Finals, you want him on the ice. I'm just happy because the Oilers fans, they can't complain anymore. So if they lose, it's because they're the worst team. And they are right now. But they're not, you know, absolved from any injuries themselves. They got some high-profile players who are hurt. Obviously, Darnell Nurse last game, invisible. No one knows what's wrong with him. I don't. You're an insider. Maybe you know. Just sitting on the bench, plays a shift here and there. I think he played less than 10 shifts, just completely gone. I don't know what his deal is. And Evander Kane, not himself. Playing a shift every, you know, three or four shifts he gets out there, but he doesn't have the jump. He's not finishing checks. He's not really making a difference at all. So those two guys are not factors. And if those two guys aren't factors, you're really in trouble for the Edmonton Oilers, because those are two key pieces to this team. So Barkov questionable, Nurse and Kane questionable. Who comes out on top if all three guys, those guys don't play?
I mean, which player steps up, do you mean? Or
well, like, which team gains an advantage? Like, does Edmonton gain an advantage if Barkov is out? Because he's huge shutting down McDavid.
See, I didn't even realize that Nurse only played 4 minutes.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, although is he an addition by subtraction? You can make that joke. But, yeah, I don't know. The best players being out, which is Barkov. So I think for Edmonton does come out on top if all those guys are missing. But I have a feeling most of them will be back. Evander, well, for example, hasn't been practicing with the team like the entire week, you know, and it's just part of it.
I don't think he's really, he was terrible all regular season, so I don't think he's the issue. It's Nurse and Barkov. They need Nurse out there. As much as we dog him, as much as he makes bad plays, the guy eats minutes. And basically what you're trying to do is just go out there, not make a mistake so Bouchard and Ekholm can get out there. That's it. That's what the bottom four are doing for the Oilers right now. It's the Bouchard-Ekholm show. And everybody else is just trying to go 500. That's it. Don't give up a goal. We're not going to get a goal. That's what we're doing. That's what I did when I played. Go out there, log in 40 seconds and get off. And then you go, whew, I did it. Let's do it again. So, like, Darren A stinks. Like, they all stink. It's Ekholm and Bouchard. That's it. And when Bouchard has to play crazy amounts of minutes and he's feeling this pressure and he knows he's the guy, he makes mistakes. So they need Nurse out there. They really, really do. They don't have anybody else to play. So leaning on that, is it panic time for the Oilers?
I think yes. Yeah, I mean, you know, we always say, this series doesn't start till the home team loses, which hasn't happened yet. Florida's up 2-0. They're heading back to Edmonton tonight. So you have that going for you, but I feel like you have to be panicking. You know, what is the percentage here? 91% of the time in the Stanley Cup Finals, the team that goes up 2-0 wins the series. And they were the better team. And Florida is the best road team in the league.
Yeah.
They took 2 out of 3 in Madison Square Garden against the Rangers. They won all 3 games in Boston against that series. Like, everything is pointing Florida. And maybe there's a surprise. Then, you know, statistics like to surprise us sometimes. But right now, it's looking all Florida.
Oilers have 2 goals in 2 games. Like, that's... I'm panicking, yeah, if I'm the Oilers. Everybody's resting on the fact, oh, when they go home, it's going to be different, home ice advantage. No, I don't think so. I think this series could be a sweep. Unfortunate for us and for everybody watching, but I think the Panthers are just asserting their dominance. They showed it throughout the playoffs, whether it was Kucherov, Pasta, Panarin. Now it's Draisaitl and McDavid. They're making them look very pedestrian. These guys, like, they get 150 points a year, Tim, and they're getting nothing. Nothing from them. It's crazy how efficient they are. Like, what grade A chance has Draisaitl had this series that he's created? I can't think of any. Like, they're doing a really effective job shutting these guys down. Like, it's amazing. 5-on-5 goals, all of these guys, Kucherov, Pasta, Zibanejad, Panarin, McDavid, Draisaitl, 5-on-5, how many goals have those guys combined for?
I feel like if you said 5 or 6, that would be a really low number.
0 goals in 19 games.
Yeah, it's
crazy.
That's
an incredible stat. So, I don't know. Florida's just, I think, showing up right now. I'm sorry if I'm talking over you, Tim. You're a little delayed. I don't hear you talking. But yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to agree with you. Yeah, it's just Florida's a better team. It's pretty simple. We can talk about the X's and O's and the goalie matchups and shutting down these guys. Top to bottom, they're just a better team. They've been the better team since the puck dropped in game one. And I think you are going to see a fight back. We can talk about at the end of our show, our prediction for game 3 and maybe 4. But Florida is just right now, they're just another level above Edmonton right now.
Yeah, and Edmonton, I don't want to downplay. They got to the Stanley Cup Finals. That's good. But they played an LA Kings team that was just not great. They played a Vancouver Canucks team that had a lot of holes, and they almost lost to them. They were down 3-2, and they had to come back and win. So, you know, they haven't really had the test. Florida's beaten 3 teams that could conceivably all win the Stanley Cup. Boston Bruins, Tampa Bay Lightning, New York Rangers. All 3 of those teams are really solid Eastern Conference teams, and Florida just waxed them. Like, it wasn't even close. I think what we're seeing now is just Florida's that team. Like, they really are. We were hoping Edmonton would put up a fight, but Florida's that team. Anything else, Tim, before we jump to game 3 and quick hits?
No, let's talk about the quick hits here. The first one, Jim Nill. unsurprisingly, has been the GM of the Year award, which I think we kind of thought was going to happen. Done a lot of things well. Obviously, the Tanev trade at the deadline. He's just built a really good team. And I don't know. Were you surprised by that, or is that with the right pick?
I think it was great. Yeah. He's done well in Dallas. Really, what the mixture of veterans and youth, it's, I don't think any other team can match that. So he's done really, really solid in Dallas. They just haven't got over that hump. So we'll see what he does next year. More cap space, Joe Pav's off the books. This team's going to be good next year too.
Right. The next one, this is interesting. Saravelli said on a podcast that about Mitch Marner, he said, quote, "I think the Leafs are going to make a play and they're basically back him into a corner over the next 3 weeks that says, Mitch, it's been great, but we're moving on. So whether it's now or 8 months from now, your time is up." We had talked about this, like, is he going to waive his no move clause, whatever? And do you want to play somewhere that doesn't want you? And I think you had said that why would he do it? But it sounds like they're going to directly say, hey, you're done. Let's end this. Let's move on. So what do you think of that quote?
That's ballsy.
Yeah.
If that's the stance that they're taking, that's, I don't think that's ever been taken before. A team telling one of their superstars who is in his prime.
Under contract.
Contract. Like, still for this season. We're done. I think this is a last gasp effort from Toronto to try to get him to waive his no move clause, because they desperately want to trade him, but they can't because he doesn't want to be traded. He wants to go to free agency. He doesn't want to leave Toronto, maybe. So this is a last effort of a desperate man saying, no. Whether it's now or in 8 months, we're gone. We're moving on. If I'm Mitch Marner, I say, fine. I'm not waiving my no move clause unless he has one or two teams that he specifically wants to go to. Why would you? Because you can hit the open market next year and you can have all kinds of suitors. Imagine him, UFA. Wow, he worked his contract status pretty solid. He's going to be UFA at 26 years old. And the guy's one of the best players in the league in the regular season. So interesting. Interesting strategy in Toronto. Brad Chervealing, I don't envy his position. Try to retinker this team and to make it better, which is going to be very hard to do, because they are incredible in the regular season and they have that core who is really good. It's some would say unattainable. I don't think there's a trade he makes that makes him a better team by giving away Mitch Marner.
No.
So
no.
Poor guy. All right. What's Ovi saying, Tim? He's in Russia playing soccer, drinking vodka. What is he doing? Probably training like a crazy man.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the pictures in the offseason, maybe it was even during the playoffs when he's showing up to the plane with his Mountain Dew and Cheetos and all that, and he's never been like a slim specimen guy. Yeah, but he said on summer training, he said, quote, "You go to training, then rest, then another training. I hate it. I can't stand it." And everyone's talking about, like, he's getting older. The only chance he has is staying healthy, obviously, and a huge part of that is conditioning. Can he keep up with the game to score the goals in order to break Gretzky's record? And this quote doesn't make it seem like he wants to put that work in.
Well, why would you? Your team has no chance of winning. They had a really solid year this year. Made the playoffs. That was an exciting thing. You get waxed in the first round. That can't be fun. But, like, what do you have to look forward to next year? Honestly, he's 38, going to be 39. I think he wants to be doing two-a-days and on-ice and off-ice and plyometrics and all that jazz. He's been doing it for 25 years. You want to be at home with your kids. You want to relax. Like, you're in the twilight of your career. You want to enjoy life. I still think he's going to play two more years. But yeah, that record, Tim, that's tricky. He had that hot streak last year, and we'll touch on it next year. But he's sitting at, what, 853 goals? What did Gretzky have? How many is behind him?
894, so 41 to go.
That's attainable. Yeah. It's attainable. And you know he's going to work. He's just complaining. Summer training is the worst, especially now when there's still hockey going on. You have to go to the gym. It's a lot of mental stuff. But he's got trainers and people who call him like, "Hey, Ovi, come on, let's go." He'll be fine. And they don't hit anymore. So he's got no issues. They're doing their whole offense for him. Like, oh,
right.
Just go and stand in that one spot and you'll score goals. Like, you don't have to skate at all. The owner has said, all we want to do is get him the record. That's it. We don't care about winning. All right, let's do some predictions, Tim. Get out of here. It's game three tonight. Oilers-Panthers. Tomorrow night, excuse me. Gosh, this three-day layoff. It's just,
I know.
Tomorrow night, game three. Who are you taking? In Edmonton, in oil country. Fans are going to go bonkers.
Here's so there's a picture of Barkov at practice wearing his usual white jersey, no bowl, anything like that. He looks normal. And so the quote from Murray says, quote, felt better today, got through skate today as far as I know. He'll get checked after, get him on a plane, get home, get him on the ice, see where he's at tomorrow. Basically, he's saying just nothing but no news is good news. So
crazy.
Yeah, I think you see the Edmonton's best tomorrow night. They know they can't go down 3-0. They're playing in front of their home fans. They know what's at stake. Their back's against the wall, even though there's still potentially 5 games left in the series. I think you see Edmonton's best effort. I think they win tomorrow night. Ooh. I still like Florida to win the series. I think they're going to split in Edmonton, but I think Edmonton takes game three.
In order for the Oilers to win, who scores for them?
Hyman.
Zachary Hyman. He's been pretty quiet, too. I think being at home, I know Florida's a good road team. That will benefit the Oilers more than any other team the Panthers have played, just because they can throw out that nuclear option at any given moment. And when you see Steinlin, Lorenz, and Okposo jump over the boards for a faceoff, you're going to see the top three. That's what I would do if I was Knobloch. You have to match lines. You have to get those guys away from Barkov, Reinhardt, and Verhaeghe. Kachuk, Bennett, Rodriguez. They're just too good. Their sticks are too good. They're too energetic. So hopefully they can, you know, get that matchup game going and win that and get some, you know, just some better situations for McDavid. But I think Florida's going to win. I think it was Florida wins game three, Edmonton wins game four. Hopefully. Win the cup at home.
I really hope whoever wins, wins it at home. Like, it's just a little thing, but I don't like when the team wins on the road. You don't get to do it with your fans in your building, you know?
Yeah, we're gonna go to the final game and do a show right from the ice, I think. I'm still working on the details, but yeah, that'll be fun. So hopefully it's in Florida. We can go south instead of north.
I'm in.
Whatever the case, it'll be a lot of fun. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. We appreciate the support. Go out and have some fun. Watch the game tomorrow night. We will talk to everybody on Friday. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.